Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with writers in the studios of North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
Former Episcopal priest Terry Hunt urges each of us to write a special autobiography. He shares his own in a book called Witness. He is a graduate of Alma College in Michigan and Virginia Theological Seminary and the postgraduate training program at the Gestalt Institute of Cleveland. In his spiritual autobiography, Terry Hunt writes of epiphanies he has experienced over his lifetime, often using the word numinous to describe them. They are mysterious experiences filled with a sense of the presence of divinity, many coming as coded communications or metaphors. Terry Hunt, welcome.
Thank you, Nancy. Nice to be with you. I've listened to you many times.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at the cover of your book because before I even get past the cover, I see a lot of questions I want to ask you. One is, if you would please describe the cover to listeners.
Well, I wanted a cover with redwood trees because these are giant redwoods that are in the cover of the book. And at the bottom, there's like a trail and there's rays of light coming down through the redwoods. The reason I wanted the redwoods rather than a cathedral or a church building is that when I'm in with giant redwoods, there is a sense of their just incredible size, and I feel very small in their presence. And there's a sense of quiet, and I feel often a sense of a presence there that I, to me, is a presence of the Holy One. And so that's why I wanted this picture. And I think it's the guy who designed this, Michael Aguilio, who designed it for me. I think it's really beautiful and it's really does what I wanted.
I might mention that he is also an author himself. Michael is.
Yes,
I've interviewed
yes.
him. Well, this picture also calls to mind once you're a cyclist, you were out cycling with a group, and when you stopped and you're all just talking, as you might expect, and one guy in the group asks you all to be silent.
Yes.
This photograph on your cover evokes that. I see the beauty and I see silence.
Yes. Silence is sometimes so very important, yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, the title of your book is Witness, Hearing the Voice of God. And I'm not sure we all agree on even what that term is, God. why do you use God as the term in your on your cover, in your title of your book?
Well, I have come through many of these experiences to believe that there is a vast intelligence undergirding this whole creation. It may be that it is a creation that has evolved. Evolution may be the process, but everything is so related and ties together. And I have this sense of a presence. And then I've had these experiences one after another, some of which are just direct communications to some kind of numinous spirit. You used one of my favorite words, numinous, which means a presence of the Holy One. So I could use the word God. There's no word that would be appropriate to try to define this presence because this is intelligence beyond our little brains. I mean, our conscious minds are something like only 5 or 10% of our brain. But this is an intelligence vast beyond our ability to define or explain how it could be that there is this vast intelligence in this universe.
My guest is Terry Hunt, and he has written a spiritual autobiography, which he calls Witness, Hearing the Voice of God. Now, from what you said, Terry, you represent a point of view that is in contrast with the point of view of some very intelligent people who say, nah, this universe is caring, mechanistic, with lots of unprovable unknowns and theories. They say it's uncaring, and that's the opposite of what you say, just said, Terry.
I don't know that we would always think of the universe itself as caring or uncaring. I'm not talking about the universe. I'm talking about the vast intelligence that undergirds it, and that from which we arise, each of us a unique being. That can be possible, that each of us is unique when there are billions of people on the earth, Terry can certainly not explain. But this is what I experience. And that's what I'm writing about, is my experiences. I know they run across, you know, there are people who certainly disagree with this. And I have some very good friends who are atheists, but I'm not. We often disagree and we have many interesting conversations, but we're both human beings and neither one of us has final answers on all this.
Well, you used just now the word being referring to us humans, but you also in your book say, it took many years of living and a number of seminal experiences before I was shocked into an awareness that God is real, a being. Yes. And you say that this word being, no doubt the wrong word, but we have no right word to describe him and no right pronoun either. That also comes up. People don't know what pronoun to use. I will call him a presence who could and did speak to me. Although his messages were not always easy to recognize or decipher. So the title of your book, you say, Hearing the Voice of God. So how did you hear this voice? In what form did it come to you? When you say God spoke to you, how did he do that?
Well, in many different ways at different times. Sometimes through a profound dream. Sometimes, which I talk about, especially I have a very important dream that's near the end of the book. So sometimes a profound dream, sometimes something that somebody would say to me, like one day I was walking across the campus in my freshman year as a college student, and my humanities professor was walking across with me right after lunch. And he asked me a very personal question. He said, Terry, why do you have such a chip on your shoulder? And my answer was, I don't have a chip on my shoulder. And so that revealed something about a very caring presence that was expressing itself through my professor. And my response to that, my denial, but it was striking me very deeply. I needed to look at what was going on inside me that made me get in so many fights as a little boy, made me a better football player than I probably would have been otherwise, because I really had a lot of anger in me and I didn't know the source of it. And it would be another 10 years after this before I would have an experience that would bring that source of my anger right out in front of me.
Well, a lot of times if somebody hears voices, you're saying your voices, and people go, oh my gosh, he's crazy. So weren't you apprehensive about writing a book like this?
Yes, absolutely. I know that there'll be people who think I'm crazy. And I don't think any of us want people to think we're crazy. And I certainly don't. So it was hard for me. I tried to write it first as a novel, but then I realized finally I couldn't do it. And finally I realized if you did it successfully, no one would believe that you have actually been addressed by God, because it's a novel. It's fiction. He made it up. So I've got to put it out there and tell them tell people exactly what I was doing when God sometimes corrected me or said something that was just incredible and quite loving and so on. But I've had many different kinds of experiences.
Yeah. I thought of a quote from George Carlin who said, "Those who dance are considered insane by those who cannot hear the music." And so I think people would say, "Hey, that Terry's insane because we don't hear voices." And so George Carlin is saying, well, you might call people insane if you don't hear the music. Will you give us three reasons, in fact, that you say you were apprehensive about writing a book like this? There are several reasons. Mm-hmm. And you say, first, our culture increasingly does not believe in God and certainly doesn't teach us to recognize or value spiritual moments. In fact, many people are contemptuous of anyone who admits they've had a single spiritual experience. And it seems like just in the news recently, I heard of the declining attendance in churches generally, just across the board. Mm-hmm. So we as a culture don't believe like we used to, I may put it that way. And then we believe that we live in a creation with a creator. Our world is not an accidental universe. And that's what you're bringing across. And then you say that this creator knows me and cares for me.
Yes.
And you're not claiming it. You're the only one loves. His love is not just limited to you, this single human being. But I think a lot of people would say, no, this, they would have trouble believing that this creator, God, knows you and cares for you. So that was another reason you said you were apprehensive about putting this book out. And you say people may not learn to organize this presence and don't realize how valuable these numinous moments are. And so that would be their loss, but also yours.
Yes.
And you also reveal all your weaknesses and your failures in this book. And as I could imagine, that wasn't easy.
No. Is there one of those several things that you want me to comment on particularly?
Well, you just say, when God has spoken to me, it has not always been to tell me what a lovely fellow I am.
Yes. I was watching the Detroit Tigers, who were in the World Series. And I was a very serious Detroit Tiger fan and finally made the World Series. And in the middle of the game, my Springer Spaniel, Strider, suddenly came into the room and started just barking at me. And I looked at him and went on watching the game, and he barked some more at me. And I said, "Strider, shut up. The Tigers are in the World Series." And but he wouldn't. He barked at me some more, and he went over and stood up at the window and looked out in the backyard, and then looked back at me and started barking and looked out in the backyard. And it was dark out there. It was after, 8 o'clock in the evening. It was 9 o'clock. I don't know. Anyway, I finally got up out of my chair, and he immediately ran out the back door through his doggy door. And when I opened the door, I saw that the dome in my car, the dome light in my car was on. And I went to the car, and the rear door was ajar. And I thought, somebody left this rear door ajar. And I looked inside, and my gym bag was empty. All my clothes that I had worn that day when I was doing my exercise were thrown around the back seat. And my brand new Brooks running shoes were gone. And I went almost instantly into a rage. I'd just gotten them. I paid what was a lot in that time for $120 for these shoes. And I came out of the garage, and Strider headed immediately for the back corner of our yard. And in that back corner, our yard joined an alleyway. There was a lot of small trees and bushes in that back corner. And I thought, that so-and-so is back there in that corner and he's changing into my running shoes. So I ran back there following Strider, determined to nail him. And when I got there, there was enough light for me to see that there was no one there. So immediately I realized that he had already changed into the shoes and probably and had jumped over that fence and was going to be coming out of the alleyway. Well, I knew exactly where that alleyway came out on the street, of course, and I went running down the street, and Strider was running with me. And on my way, I was planning what I was going to do when I saw him. And I was thinking that when I saw him, I would just slow down and start to walk like I was tired and I was just trying to get my breath from my run. And as we approached each other, I would see that he would either have my shoes on or he would be carrying them in his hand. So I would know who it was. And then when he was right beside me and I was just paying no attention to him, all of a sudden I was going to take him right in the Adam's apple, with, you know, just jam my right fist right in his Adam's apple. And instantly this voice went off in my head and it said, turn the other cheek, love your enemy. And I said, I hate that. I've hated that all my life. Why did you say that? And this voice said, I said it so you wouldn't kill somebody or get killed over a pair of running shoes. And Nancy, that just stopped me in my tracks. Right, I thought, it would be really stupid to kill somebody or get killed over a pair of running shoes. Well, I could tell more of the story, but you see what I was doing and the kind of a guy I could be. I could be a very violent guy. And I wasn't always doing something that I'm very proud of. And God addressed me very personally.
My guest is former Episcopal priest, Terry Hunt. And his book is Witness, Hearing the Voice of God. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, former Episcopal priest Terry Hunt, who has written a spiritual autobiography, Witness, Hearing the Voice of God. You say you were very conditioned by my family, my culture, my own history.
Yes.
To resort to violence. And we see this in our culture. It just breaks my heart that there is this tendency. And you recognize the fact that you needed help to start choosing different ways to express your angry and to solve what happens as a result of this tendency to express your anger the way you just described. That was what you were expecting to do. And this, whoever spoke to you and said, Terry, don't do that. And I wonder too, what other people, that's what you made of this, of Stryker's behavior. And I was wondering what, Strider's, you asked the reader, well, what do you make of Strider's behavior?
Yeah, well, there was a point that I go on to tell in the story that I haven't told yet, which is when we go back into the backyard, I'm going to go in and watch the rest of the Detroit Tiger, that game on television. And Strider heads immediately back to that back corner again and is barking at me again. So I thought, oh, for heaven's sakes. Well, I wouldn't listen to him before. I better listen to him now. So I followed him back to the back corner, and he went into that back corner, and he came back out carrying a great big old beat up running shoe with holes in it and everything else, and he dropped it right in front of me. And then he went back into that woods and came back out again with the other beat up old running shoe. They were huge. I wear a size 13, which is pretty big, but this was even bigger. I don't know if that guy could fit into my running.
So this is a big guy. You were almost going to punch in the Adam's apple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably. So. Probably a pretty big guy. Yeah. Anyway, you asked a question that caused me to want to tell you the rest of the story. What I asked about what my reader thinks about Strider's behavior. I don't think Strider, I think Strider all the way through this was obeying instructions. A dog may retrieve a pheasant, a rabbit, you know, a dove or a quail or something. A pair of old running shoes? No. What is, and why is it so important that I see these running shoes? So on. Well, for me, it was so important that I see the running shoes because I had no more question. If I had any question whose voice that was I was hearing on the street before, now I had none. Because a dog just wouldn't behave this way if it weren't working under instructions.
Well, these days when everybody has access to video from their phones, I see videos of dogs saving their owners' lives, and you just wonder how did the dog know to do that?
Yes.
And here's an example. Strider kind of saved your life. Who knows what that big guy would have done to you, Terry?
Well, he may have saved my life, or he may have saved me from having been convicted of a violent crime.
Yeah. My guest is Terry Hunt. He has written a spiritual biography called Witness, Hearing the Voice of God. And, you know, I was going to go to the age of 10 when you had an opportunity to ask a question. And I was quite impressed that even at the age of 10, Terry, this was something that was of interest to you. What did you ask your pastor when you were 10 years old?
I created the opportunity. I went there directly to see him at 10 years of age. But because mother had been reading Hurlbut's stories of the Bible to us, and in the Bible, one person after another gets addressed by God. Moses is out taking his father-in-law's sheep out in the wilderness. And he sees a bush that burns and burns and is not consumed. And he's seeing something that could not possibly happen, but it's happening. Now, a lot of people are not going to stick around when they see something or hear something they think could not be happening. They don't want anybody thinking they're crazy. And they don't know what they're dealing with here. And so they turn and leave. But Moses had a different attitude. He said, let us turn and see what this is, this strange thing that this bush is burning and burning and is not consumed. And all of a sudden, then after he turned to see what it was, the voice spoke to him and said, take off your shoes. The ground upon you stands holy. And Moses fell on for God. That's one of Moses's many experiences with what the Jews call Holy One of Israel. And the Christians and the Muslims all use this same Bible. The Muslims add to it, but they use its the Old Testament and the New Testament and the Quran. I don't know why I went into that. That's probably beside your point.
Well, I was
maybe you can get me back back.
Well, tell us what the pastor then replied when you ask your question to your pastor. Oh,
yeah, the pastor. I said, you know, does God still speak to us as he did the people of the Bible? And he said, no, he doesn't. God doesn't speak to us anymore. He used to speak to the people in the Bible, but he doesn't speak to us anymore. Well, that was a very disturbing answer to me. I'm not sure I really believed it, but I also didn't know that I had had an experience in which God had spoken to me. So I just think now, and have for a long time, realized that that question was like a question that was given to me early in my life. Like, this is your question, mister. You find out, what's this all about, this question? Does God still speak to us? And what I realized is that it's very difficult to recognize. Well, the clues are there, but no one in school, no one in our churches, at least in my experiences, talks about how do you recognize God. Many years ago, George Burns had a TV program in which he played the part of God, and he would call people on the phone and say, "Hi, this is God calling." Well, God never does that. He never says, "Hi, this is God calling." You either turn aside when you see something happening that cannot be happening, you pay attention. You learn to pay attention when you have a certain set of feelings, maybe the feelings of you're in a situation which you're deeply inadequate to solve. And all of a sudden you have an experience that gives you something that helps you to deal with this problem.
Well, I liked an instant when you got help dealing with a problem, as you say. This one night, an idea came to you, and you say maybe it was a gift from the Holy Spirit. The thought that suddenly appeared was like a voice telling me, you can't stop your mind from dreaming up fearful thought after another by telling it to stop thinking like that. But you can refocus it on positive thoughts, like giving thanks to God for all the good things that have happened to you in your life. And I think this is a helpful tip, Terry, that we sometimes just obsess over some fearful thought or another, and we just keep thinking about it and thinking about it. But you say, but you can refocus on positive thoughts. And that you say, that thought just suddenly came to you like a voice. Now, I wanted to go to fast forward a couple of generations to another 10-year-old. He happened to be your grandson, Dashiell. And you beg to differ with Dashiell, because what did Dashiell just up and say? Well, Grandpa, what did he say?
Human beings are just animals, Grandpa. And we were on a trip taking a couple of our grandkids across the country. And I must have been talking about how we are in some ways spiritual beings. And Dashiell found it, what I was saying, contradictory to what he had been hearing. And he sounded kind of quite angry with me, like, Grandpa, human beings are just animals. And I said, where did you get that, Dash? And he didn't want to say anything more. And I was afraid his parents might have taught him this, or maybe his teachers. Many years before, I asked him again about, where did you get that? And he said, well, on the Animal Planet, a program on television. And I said, I thought at that point, I'll just test him a little bit farther and see if I can get him to think about this a little more deeply. And I'm going back now to the point at which he was in the car with us. And I said, Dash, what animal do you know who is really very afraid of dying all his life? Almost every day, if he thinks about it, he's going to be afraid of dying. Do you think that's just typical of all animals? And he didn't answer for me. And he gave no evidence that he was willing to go beyond his saying, you know, humans are just animals.
My guest is former Episcopal priest Terry Hunt. He has written a spiritual autobiography, kind of as a model, because he wants to encourage each of us to write a spiritual biography. The title of his is Witness, Hearing the Voice of God. And you, when you're a young kid now, you're interested, you're asking your pastor this very important question, but you get to high school. And so people might think, well, this guy knows at a young age, he's going to be a priest. But when you go to high school, I think being a priest was probably the farthest thing from your mind. Was it, Terry? What were you interested in high school?
Basically two things, sports and girls, or maybe it was girls, sports. That was it. Those are my primary interests, definitely.
So that's pretty typical high school kid, but you did have skills and you're also talented musically. You participate in theater. So you had a variety of interests, and I thought it was kind of amusing of how you picked your college, by which dining hall you like the food in. You and a friend were checking things out and said, oh, well, we like the food better at this college, so let's go here.
Right.
But meanwhile, you are dealing, you didn't even know it at this age, because you say you were much older before you began to realize how you felt about your father. This professor said, Terry, why this chip on your shoulder? And you later say, I hated my own father. You were angry, wounded, hurting, and sometimes hateful. You say you felt rejected by your father, that you felt you were a deep disappointment to your father. And this is so distressing, Terry, for me, because I see now this younger generation, the dads participate and help, you know, raising the children. But our generation was not like that. And I hear all too many stories of men at this time in their life who had these same feelings that their father never said they loved them. They didn't encourage them. And I don't know that they were as angry as you were, because this was a serious problem for you. When you
yes.
finally dawned on me, when tell us that, give us that scene when you finally screamed practically, that you realized what the problem was.
I just want to preface this a little bit. I think my father was really a wonderful father in many ways, but he was also a terrible father in many ways. So I had good signals coming from one side and very, very bad signals coming at other times. Like just one time on the farm, when I grew up on the farm, when I was about 11 or 12, he with a bullwhip. That was just one of the many punishments that I got. They were very physical punishments. I say early on in my book there that when my father's belt came off, you know, he used it. And there were no circlers in those days, you know, to take a father's belt away from him, like we may have today. And in some ways, that maybe may have been a good thing, but in other ways, it was a very bad thing too. So I had that going on, but had in me this very anger. And when I got to seminary, it erupted when I had a father-son paper, and I was 28 years old at the time, and it was the first paper I was assigned that I just couldn't write, and I couldn't figure out why I couldn't write it, and I went through a lot of agony about it, and finally began to lose my sleep, and I finally went through about four nights in a row with no sleep at all, and I was beginning to become non-functional, and I became desperate. So I went to see the chaplain, and I was sitting in his office talking to him. And suddenly I looked up, and he was sitting across the desk from me, and the tears were just running down his face. And I can't tell you how that powdered me, how this man weeping for me just hit me so hard. And something switched and twitched in my stomach. Something changed there. And I didn't know what it was. The next day I came back to his office and I was talking to him again. And I was telling him about a couple other guys in my class that I was very angry with. And he looked at me and he said, "Terry, who are you really so angry with?" And it just erupted from me all the way from my stomach, from my belt line up, right just out of me. And it said, "My father, I hate the SOB." I didn't abbreviate it at the time, but being on the air, maybe I should. And all of a sudden, all my anxiety was gone. And I write that paper. And I got A+.
After a break, Terry Hunt and I will be continuing our conversation about his book, Witness, Hearing the Voice of God. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with author Terry Hunt, whose book is Witness, Hearing the Voice of God. And you do say when he tells you, "Terry, go get the bullwhip," and your mother tried to stand in between the two and keep him from doing that. And I have a friend who, similar background as yours with his father, and his mother did not stand up for him either, except one time. He said one time when his father was holding a chair over his head, I guess, getting ready to throw a chair at his son, and she said, "Don't do this."
Oh.
But like I say, these things that you tell are not the details are unique, but are seem to be common. But Terry, you have seemed to have sorted it out. And I don't know that all these other people have. They carry these resentments, if that's a word I want to use. And you have figured out a way to deal with it, to cope with it. And your book can be a model of how people can help themselves by writing their story, like you did. Now, I want to go to the point where we don't know until you tell us this, that you had a sister named Carol Jean. I've never heard in my life a woman named Carol Jean. I've known some Carols, but never a Carol Jean. Now, you met a Carol Jean. And
yes,
you say there were a lot of things. I mean, she was intelligent in so many ways. But I did wonder, when early in your relationship, if Carol was okay, because you ended up marrying this Carol. And well, let's go back to your sister. How did she get the name Carol Jean?
Yeah. Well, I gave it to her. I was about 6 and a half, almost 7 years old when she was born. And I had a first grade teacher, I think, whom I loved as a little boy, and whose name was Carol Jean. And so I wanted my sister to be named Carol Jean, and my parents went along with me. They chose it. Now, all of a sudden, here I am, after I was divorced. I've been divorced for about 5 years, and I meet another Carol Jean, obviously a different one from my sister, but in many ways at a very subtle, deep level, we have many of the same strengths and many of the same weaknesses. It's like we're family and belong to each other. We were meant to be with each other. We've been married now. This is my second marriage, but we've been married 45 years. So,
well, I was wondering if your wife, Carol, was okay with you writing some of the things you wrote about her. For example, on your first real date, you went to see a movie and things got really serious about the two of you. You describe your feelings and you say you were 36-year-old and your knees were knocking. And she took me by the hand, yes, and led me up the stairs. And so I was wondering, whoa, Terry, is Carol okay with all this you're writing about her?
Well, I don't think I said anything more, did I?
No, you didn't. You didn't. But you said, normally I was the one who led the way, but not this time. I was being led. And most important of all, I was being claimed. I belonged to her. And you say, we were, yes, both clearly in love the first week of our relationship had passed. But something you had in common, you say, you and Carol, we both felt we didn't get what we needed from our fathers.
Yeah, that's right.
So you,
that's
find-
right. Her father was essentially left her home when she was 3 years old. Yeah, and she was always had this sense of absence from her father. But for her, it meant that she turned to God as her father. It was an amazing thing she did as a young child. I don't have that in the book, but she did.
Yeah. Well, and she had her own career. She was a nurse.
Yeah.
But you also give her credit. Often you decide one course of action, and Carol, when you get her input, you go along with her, and it turns out, gosh, I'm glad I listened to Carol.
Yeah.
So the two of you, yeah, get, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. We both, we've been able to solve problems. This is what made this second marriage so different than my first marriage. In my first marriage, it was like we were always fighting over who was going to be in charge, who was going to be in control. And neither one of us trusted the other to be in charge. And it was just a hopeless situation. And
here was somebody you could trust. You could
here
trust
was somebody
Carol.
I could trust. Part of the reason I could trust her was that she would admit when she was wrong.
Yeah. And she was honest. And that.
She was honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you admired that. Yeah.
I admired it. And we could solve problems because she would admit when she was wrong. I don't think my first wife would ever admit when she was wrong. And I'm probably pretty difficult on that front as well. So. I guess we just both got to that point of realizing we need to tell the truth and be conditioned by it.
Well, I was reading in your book, because I knew what you did when 30 years ago I actually met you, and knew what you were doing at the time. And there came a point when you were no longer an Episcopal priest, and you and Carol chose to come to Chico.
Right.
And you actually, it was a very conscious choice. You knew what you were looking for in a town, and what were those characteristics? Because you described Chico, and as we as readers who are familiar with Chico, that, yeah, that was just what they were looking for. What were you looking for when you decided to move to California, Terry?
Well, I wanted a town that was big enough that it had, a lot of social offerings, university, town. I was interested in selling books at the time, thinking I would buy a bookstore and go into that as my next business. So I wanted a town where I thought I could sell books, but I didn't want it to be so big like the Bay Area that you're struggling with traffic problems all the time. I wanted it to be a place where the air was still breathable, and the housing was still affordable. And there were many different kinds of people. It wasn't all, you know, Democrat and or Republican. It was a big mixture of different kinds of people. All of those things were.
So you're looking for a town that needed a bookstore, Terry. You're going to open a bookstore. And it didn't turn out that way.
Right.
How did you change your mind about what kind of books you wanted to offer?
Well, I wanted to offer new books, but I talked to a number of bookstore dealers and so on, and they said, it's really difficult because you're going to be up against Amazon and Barnes and Noble and so on. And if you've got a new book, everybody's got it. Now, what you ought to think about is selling used books, out of print and collectible books. That's what you ought to think about, because that's where the profit can be much, much greater. Well, I didn't want any old books that were all beat up and coffee stained and, you know, so on and so forth. But the argument was just very powerful. So I started to look into used and out of print books and collectible books and so on. And so then I thought, this is the direction for me to go. And I was still thinking about a bookstore, but the cost for rent and everything else was pretty high, and I wasn't sure that I had the monetary resources to work that out. So I started out selling books through catalogs, and very soon, it was about that time that the internet began, and all of a sudden I discovered that you could sell books over the internet, and you could expose people to the books you had to offer all over the world. And I sold a book in Kathmandu to an Englishman in Kathmandu, and I sold another one to somebody in Vladivostok, Russia, and that's wow, you know. And it cost very little at the time to list your books. And pretty soon I kept collecting books, and I had 20,000 of them on the internet. And it was a lot of fun.
My guest is former bookseller Terry Hunt, who has written a spiritual autobiography, Witness Hearing the Voice of God. It wouldn't surprise us to hear that you were interested in a bookstore, Terry, because you taught English for a while. You actually were an English teacher for a while.
Yep.
And since you were a teacher, and you brought in all your talents to that profession. But you also tell us the most important thing you learned in college. And I think people would be interested to know, gosh, Terry, what was the most important thing you learned in college? And what was it? Who was the person who impressed you so with what he emphasized in his class?
Yes, it was Dr. Ross Miller. And he, at Alma College, was a Presbyterian school, and at the time, it's still there. It's not so much a Presbyterian school as it was so many years ago when I was there. But anyway, everybody, all the students had to take 2 years of religion. And he was the main teacher in the religious department. First day we walked into class, he said, I have only one thing to teach you, and I'm going to tell you this, and it's just three words, and I want you to write it across the top of every paper you turn in, of every test you turn in, and if you spell the words correctly and you do that, you will pass this course. I'm not saying you'll get an A or a B, but you will pass this course if you do that one thing. And the three words are God is immanent. I-M-M-A-N-E-N-T. And now I'll explain to you, it's not God is immanent. In other words, something that's about to happen. It's not that he's immanent like some famous person. It's that the Greek word eminent, spelled differently, and I just spelled it a minute ago, which means that God is hidden, but active in your life. These are the, this is what I want you to learn. God is hidden, but active in your life. Well, I wrote it on the top of every paper and every test I turned in, and I passed the course and a little better. But I didn't think about it very much. Not right then. It wasn't until later.
Well, you ask us readers to consider what disciplines will help us to grow spiritually. And for example, prayer, we might expect that to be in this list as a discipline. For you, getting outdoors in nature, you were a cyclist, a runner, and that was a way to growing spiritually. So you say that what you would like us to do is to identify, to write about, and share the epiphanies, the dreams, Freudian slips, intuitions God has already sent our way. And you encourage us to do what you did and to write this down, write our spiritual biography, and that we'll be helping ourselves and others. Terry, it's been a pleasure talking to you about your book. And you have a lot of interesting facts about your life and how you learned all these lessons and how you encourage us. I might mention that you say William James had no experience, or I think it might have been in your book, William James had no experience of God, but he respected those who did. So I want to invite readers and listeners that maybe they don't have the experience that you had with God, but they can respect you and your experiences that you tell us about, as William James did.
That would be lovely. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Let me remind listeners again that the title of your book is Witness, Hearing the Voice of God, a Spiritual Autobiography by Terry Hunt.
Listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.